The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Crime is not a campaign issue in an election year, and yet it's one of the biggest worries in most Americans' minds. Why that is, I don't know. Here is one thing we all face on a day-to-day basis in our homes, in towns and big cities, and even in rural areas. Growing crime increasingly concerning Americans more than any other single domestic issue. People now worried about crime more than any single problem plaguing the nation, and certainly more so than rather vague problems such as energy, the geopolitical struggles abroad, parity or superiority on the part of the nuclear arsenal of the Soviet Union. These tend to be a little vague and unrealistic to the average individual who comes home to find his apartment burglared, or to find his automobile gone from the parking lot, or to realize his child has been abducted. But a recent poll conducted for Potomac Associates by the Gallup Organization found that residents of villages with populations under 2,500 and rural dwellers were every bit as concerned about crime as those living in big cities, or at least cities with more than 500,000. And ranking immediately below crime were 31 problems that really, in very many ways, are related to crime because, for example, violence, official corruption, even health and medical care. Well, oftentimes you'll find rip-offs and associated crimes being committed, which bring about various problems either in governmental bureaucracies or the administering of various governmentally sponsored programs. So clearly, many Americans consider some of the major domestic problems, not the least of which is the serious national crime rate, to be one of the biggest problems today, and yet the downgrade of the crime issue in the election year continues to be a little bit puzzling. Neither one of the candidates seems to view crime as a top problem facing this country, even though the polls prove it is. You wonder just what in the world is going on in the minds of those two individuals who seek to be the leaders of the great American people when 70 million Americans are apparently not even going to go to the polls to bother with the candidate of their choice if they do have a choice. And in the meantime, the experts are telling us the causes of crime remain a mystery, that crime really does pay to the big criminals and organized crime in this country, as well as the blue-collar and white-collar workers, that people as never before are arming themselves with handguns and other weapons, and that the FBI talks about a serious national crime rate. And at the same time, the presidential candidates aren't even making it an issue. Well, it is an issue to most Americans, even more pressing than international and defense matters. The report showed that in 1964, when this type of polling was first conducted, the top five items on Americans' minds were all related then, in the 60s, because of the Vietnam War, to international and defense matters. Now, the 10 leading items are domestic matters, not the least of which, of course, is suspicion of government itself. But a wide range of criminal justice experts had said recently they doubt whether more police with better equipment is going to solve the problem. They doubt very much whether improved efficiency in the courts is going to solve the problem. They doubt very much whether new, bigger, or better prisons will significantly reduce crime. Some of the 15 experts at a recent law enforcement conference in Washington blamed the nation's crime rate, which has increased, by the way, over 150% now since 1960, on those very fundamental causes of crime, which to the experts remain a mystery. But that law enforcement conference blamed crime on a breakdown of the family and community life, a breakdown in churches and schools. In other words, the gradual disintegration upon the basic institutions of society. Crime begins in the home. And the homes in the United States of America are in terrible trouble. We are a nation leading the world in divorce, leading the world in the attack upon the social institutions that represent the very underpinnings of a safe and a sane society. Yet, our various criminal theorists remain completely in the dark about what causes crime. Oh, they decry the huge outlay of cash. For example, they claim $16.5 billion in the fiscal year of 1975 alone. That's what it cost, despite continuing research, despite the bolstering of local police departments, despite federal money. All of that money, all of the systems that are supposed to combat crime, the latest helicopters and night-sensing instruments and the SWAT tactics of big urban police agencies, all the brand-new automobiles, the radar, all the various devices that are used by modern criminologists in trying to detect and apprehend criminals, and then, of course, the unbelievable morass of the criminal justice system, the need for more judges, more defense attorneys, for more non-crowded facilities in which to try them instead of these crowded hallways where they sit waiting for up to a week for something to come to court, bogged down to where 90 days, even 6 months, is not uncommon before a case can even come to court, and by that time you can't even find the witnesses. Oh, the huge outlays are there, $16.5 billion in 1975. Now, if you had a chart, you could do it just by a piece of paper. Let's take the normal 8.5 by 11 typewriter sheet. And let's say that represents crime in the United States. Now, draw yourself about a 1-inch square in the lower right-hand corner. That represents the number of criminals caught. Then blow up that square to the same size as that 8.5 by 11 and draw yourself another 1-inch square. And that represents, out of those caught, the number who actually go to jail or in some way are penalized for their crime. Then blow that up to another large piece of paper and draw another tiny circle. You're doing this, you're blowing it up because, you see, if you kept trying to draw a little square within a square, it would be so microscopic at the corner of the piece of paper you wouldn't even see it by the time you get to any meaningful understanding of these statistics. Finally, you blow up that last one, and that represents those who, if they do go to jail, stay there for the final day of the sentence they were given, who really do pay for what the judge said was the penalty for the crime. Actually, they tell us that less than half of the crimes that are committed in the United States are reported, that a vast amount of crime goes unreported, that the true incidence of crime is now and probably always has been much greater than the FBI reports show. And that does not mean that some progress has not been made in developing knowledge of the causes of crime. The proverbial causes are always there. Lack of privilege, ethnic minorities, joblessness, boredom, lack of education, depressed areas, itinerant workers with children who are uprooted, lack of proper schooling, lack of both parents, a ghetto environment, on and on and on. But really, you can very much simplify the causes of crime by understanding that it begins in the home. And if there is no home, then you have a ready-made hotbed of opportunity and potential for crime. The fact that many American families, especially those in ethnic minorities, are becoming matriarchies, where there are growing tens of thousands of young children born every year who do not know who their father is, where illegitimacy, divorce, pair-bound arrangements, legal or non-legal separations and desertions, with, I forget the last statistic, but it's well over 1 million, I believe, young American teenagers that are listed as missing, that are simply hitting the road and hanging out their thumb and trying to go from here to there because there seems to be more attractive than here, and trying to run away from their problems, and a lot of them end up dead. Drug overdose, victims of murder or crime. Now, the increases around the country are not just those of the big cities. Serious crimes rose 10% in the United States in 1975, even though there was a slight decrease in the number of murders. And, of course, I noticed that the number of murders decreasing made big headlines. So everyone could then, because there were far more violent crimes, there were more crimes against property, that the age groups represented were clear down into the 13 and 14-year age groups. 15 or 16, I believe. 16 has proverbial for the last several years been the largest representative age group of vicious crimes of all types, including rape, murder, auto theft, and grand larceny. But because murder was down a little bit, and that's a proportionate scale, you know, it's down just a little bit according to the rate, then everybody was hailing that as a decrease in crime. But where all other offenses were up. And of course, remember that only a small number of them are reported to police. Increases reported for all sections of the country and for cities, suburbs, and rural areas alike were for the suburbs 10%. Rural areas, out in the farmlands, 8%. Those increased more than cities with populations bigger than 250,000, which went up 7%. And of course, the FBI figures are based on the volume of crime And voluntary reports, by the way, from state and local police agencies. Those reports aren't always complete or accurate. Not all of them report in the first place. The reports they receive can be incomplete and inaccurate. So the so-called crime clock, remember, is only reported crime. And that shows that during 1975, every minute in the United States of America, 21 serious crimes occurred. There was a violent crime every 31 seconds, a murder every 26 minutes, a forcible rape every 9 minutes, an aggravated assault every 65 seconds, one robbery every 68 seconds, a burglary every 10 seconds, one larceny theft every 5 seconds, and a motor vehicle theft every 32 seconds. Since 1970, the crime index offenses as a group have increased 39%. Yet it is still not a campaign issue. What is the cause of crime? The cause of crime begins in the home, because the home is the place where that first authority, that first contact with life and with society, with the meaning of loving, of sharing, of giving, with the very meaning of survival as human beings, as little tiny babies, comes to every child. The absence, the perversion, the twisting, the distortion of that home environment in any way, whether an upside-down marriage where the roles are either totally reversed or very unclear, rather muddied somewhere in between, where there is no strong father figure, where there is no home that is structured according as it ought to be structured, not only, as you could prove from all of history, from investigations into those societies where a strong home structure has shown the virtual absence of crime, but as you could also find in divine writ in the Bible, which demands a certain structure in the home. And when that structure is absent, that home is a sick home, and it's going to produce sick children. Now, in this country today, for many, many years, there has been virtually an attack by various liberal elements in society against the home structure. Anyone who were to seriously suggest that father ought to be the breadwinner, that he ought to be the person in charge of the home, that mom ought to be his aide, his assistant, equal in every way with regard to the future and the present, sure, equal in her own tasks and in her own responsibilities, but on the other hand, very definitely in a different role in the home, that of help fitting meet as is required to the man. I don't know whether they'd call for the funny farm, whether the white van would come with tinkling bells and screeching siren to carry the person away or not, but that very idea shows how far we have come from the structure of the home as outlined in the Bible. All you've got to do is to take a look at many of those societies, some of which are religious. Yes, that's true in nature. For example, a lot of people have wanted to persecute a very small group called the Hutterites. There is a church known as the Amish Church or the Amish religion. And if you study into the lives of those people, you will find that because of a strong family structure. Now, yes, religious underpinnings are the reason for the strong family structure. But for the moment, forget about the reason. And let's just say that in any so-called utopian society, if you were to discover some jungle society somewhere, you would find the same thing would be true if the very underpinnings of that society were a strong home structure with very clear roles for the father and the mother, with a total absence of divorce, with a home environment which included sitting down to eat meals together, home-oriented recreational activities, home family-oriented teaching and educational opportunities, home and family-oriented labor or work or profession, in many cases, in most cases, in the two religions I speak of, farming, or small cottage industry, or small business, would be the type of endeavor. So if you can look at it objectively and not just disagree because they are religiously oriented, and look at the fact that where you find a home structure that is very strong and very tight-knit, with father and mother in the home, with the children clearly aware of those roles, the children taught love and respect for country, for authority, for the father and mother, for each other, taught the value of strong moral tenets, mores, and laws, taught that a hard day's work deserves a good, honest wage, taught to give, to share, and taught, of course, to keep their hands off other people's property, to respect their elders, to respect their country and its flag. Now, you can take issue with the religion all you wish. You can decide that Hutterites and Amish, and of course, I do not know a great deal about all the tenets of their faith. I don't think that I have ever consciously met a person of either faith, but I have read articles written by people oftentimes even seeking to put them down or to attack them. Articles because people tend, if they don't understand someone else's religion, they tend to, of course, look down upon them. But it's very difficult to gainsay happiness, isn't it? I suppose you could put it down by claiming it's at a different level, therefore it isn't happiness the way you would like to experience. I suppose if someone saw a couple living in some society in utter poverty, a total simple relationship, a simple way of life in which their simple pleasures were so far beneath the average desires of lustful Americans living in an affluent materialistic society, they would simply scoff or snicker at anyone's life made up of such simplistic pursuits. But really, it would be very difficult to disagree with happiness per se. Maybe you can say there are degrees of happiness. I don't know whether you can agree with that or not, because a person who is totally fulfilled and totally happy is just happy, and let's let it go at that. They probably don't want some other way of life. So it's easy to put these people down and to claim that that is not a really good analogy, that it's not applicable to our society today. Just because you find a group which has religious underpinnings, and one of those underpinnings has to do with a very strong family structure, and then you find that there is no divorce and virtually no crime, that it's never heard of, that instead they think that it's an absolute penalty to the point of losing your life for all eternity to lie, to cheat, or to steal. Now, I suppose that every one of us would really just be a little edgy if we thought that we were suddenly being surrounded by a group of these Amish people. As a matter of fact, I remember one of the articles in the Los Angeles Times some years ago, which was written by an investigator and a reporter who went to the areas up in, I believe, one of the Canadian provinces or one of the north, extreme north and midwestern American states, and he reported on all of this. A lot of what he put in the article had to do with the feelings of alarm and the feelings of worry by people in small rural communities who really were uptight because they claimed that these people were buying up all the best property, and they were becoming wealthy, and they were landowners, and they were farm owners, and they were prosperous, and there was something inherently evil in this. Now, not that they didn't pay their taxes, they did. But I guess the poor people that were against these religious groups just didn't realize that the practice of thrift, of strong, hard work, and of these values of honesty and of integrity were paying off. And I guess the people that had time to sit around on the bench in the sun in front of the county courthouse and gripe about the Amish because the Amish were out there working their heads off and ending up owning some 40 acres here and there were a little uptight about it. But, you know, on the other hand, they didn't seem to say anything at all about those dirty Amish kids ripping off their farms or vandalizing their tractors or stealing their daughters or burglarizing their homes or holding up the county bank. There wasn't any problem from local police agencies. He knew he didn't have to go looking out on the Amish farms to find the kid that just got through rifling the local store. No, I suppose the average American, if he saw a whole bunch of people move into a community who religiously believed in this and that tenet of faith, but also one of them just happened to be a strong family structure, he'd be a little suspicious of that. He'd worry about it. He'd think, man, I wonder, I'm about to be taken over by all these religious weirdos that believe dad ought to be dad and in charge of the family and mom ought to really appreciate it. But, you know, on the other hand, every American wants his neighbor to obey the Ten Commandments. Now, I'm not saying every American wants to obey the Ten Commandments. I think every American wants to obey the Ten Suggestions. And he doesn't want to have any commandment of any kind at any time, including a stop sign when he's driving his automobile to get in his way to impede his progress. The average American doesn't want to obey law, doesn't want to be in any way hampered or restricted by law. He doesn't want to be fettered by rules and regulations. But he sure wants his neighbor to observe laws. Even a dirty crook wants another crook to be an honest person. The dirty crook who comes out of the apartment just through ripping off the color television set and comes out struggling away because, you know, the thing is kind of heavy. There are two of them. They're about to break their back, and they're up in their mid-40s. They got a drug habit that takes at least 100 and a quarter a day. The only way to do that is to rip off 2 to 3 TV sets a day. Let's say they're operating in North Dallas. A few thousand of them apparently are. But, of course, you could pick any city. And they come out of the apartment, and lo and behold, some dirty, rotten crook stole the automobile they came up to the scene of the crime in. And there they are, standing there with nothing on but their tennis shoes, with no car to drive. And are they ever angry? They look at each other and say, some rotten crook stole our car. Of course, the fact that it was a stolen car in the first place was kind of interesting. Matter of fact, we had a little TV commercial since I'd actually read of statistics where that had happened. Really, that had happened. Can you believe that? Except in this one case, I think this couple of dirty burglars came out of some little old lady's apartment struggling along with a color television set to find the back end of the automobile jacked up and two of the tires missing. So we duplicated that in one of our television commercials on this booklet about crime, where people could see these characters ripping off his apartment, came out, here's the jack, there's the tire. They're standing there scratching their head and saying, some dirty crook stole our car. No, the average American wants a person living next door to be a God-fearing, peace-loving, Ten Commandment-keeping Christian. He wants the person that he buys his automobile from to be absolutely honest. He wants to know that product really does not have factory defects. He wants to know its warranty is good. He wants to know it's going to last. It's going to serve him. He's going to get his money's worth. But if he's on the other side of the desk, what kind of a person is he? Now, all you can say is that somebody somewhere is a dirty crook. Now, I know it's not you. But somebody somewhere is. As a matter of fact, there are so many somebodies that it makes up a growing segment of the American populace. And I don't like to hear people, whether they're politicians or theoreticians, criminologists, or anyone else, try to tell the average American living in fear of crime that there is this one little tiny percent of 1% of these idiots on the fringes of society ripping off all the rest of us. The rest of us people are all good folks. Do you know that that's part of our problem? One of the major problems with us is we will not admit what is wrong with us. We like to hear people getting on the radio and in public information media. I heard a broadcast recently when I was in the city of Chicago. It's been some months ago now, where a fellow was railing on and on and on about this magical tiny little percentage of this one little tiny group of Americans giving all the rest of us good, God-fearing folks a bad name. And man, did I ever want to stuff some statistics down. I mean, did I ever want to, show some statistics to that guy and let him see the real truth of what he's talking about? All he has to do is to go out and do what we've done for the television program in the past and interview street passers-by and people just out in the public. All he's got to do is really look at it. It's a lot more than any 2 or 3 or 5%. It's an unbelievable proportion of American people. And serious crime is now rising faster in some of the proverbial peace-loving areas out in our farms and our rural communities, out in suburbia and rural areas where all the people were fleeing from the big cities. Now, maybe they all fled there, and that's where they are. And maybe they used to be in the big cities, so maybe that's why all the crime is out in the urban areas, or I should say suburban and rural areas now, but I don't really believe that. I believe that it is the sum total of all that we call the American way of life, which primarily is vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. It begins with materialism and the worship of material possessions. It begins with the false values that a man's worth is measured by his bank account. It begins with the idea that the home is no longer a viable social and public institution. It begins with the idea that the pulpits have lost their power and that most pastors are frankly afraid to preach to their congregations the requirement to obey law. Especially God's law. You're not going to find one church out of 1,000 in most places in the United States where they will actually stand up in a pulpit and say, you had better obey the Ten Commandments. In the spirit as well as in the letter. Oh, the letter still is viable. It's still living. It's still active. It still applies. But Jesus magnified the Ten Commandments and said, even if you think about it, it's a crime. I understand one presidential candidate has said he's thought about it. But, you know, Jesus Christ is able to forgive, and there is the substance, the element of mercy in religion. in God's Word, and of course there isn't a human being walking the face of the earth who hasn't needed gigantic amounts of that mercy, including yours truly and everyone else, which includes you as well as me, doesn't it? So I can understand that, but, you know, if we would just wake up to realize that crime is part and parcel of human nature, then all this falderall about being unable to determine what is the cause of crime. Seeing an article in print where the headline, about an inch tall, say, causes of crime remain a mystery, and I have that headline right here in front of me, came through Copley News Service, and how criminologists are trying to even link, would you believe, increases in crime to variations in climate and the weather? They're searching through heredity. They're trying to find out whether maybe you have higher crime when it's warmer weather. Well, gag, can't we understand that you know, an awful lot of crime involves leaving where you live and going to where somebody else lives to rip him off? It's a whole lot easier to do that in the summer than it is during a driving sleet storm. Of course crime is going to be a little higher, just like, you know, you got to be comfortable to riot. I've never been to a riot. Have you? You ever attended a riot? I've never wanted a riot. But it's a lot more comfortable to riot out of doors. It's real hard to riot indoors. Nobody hears about it. Now, if you had a big gang of 17 in a room built for five and you had a riot, I suppose the neighbors might not enjoy it. But you know what I mean. It takes 10,000, 5,000, 3,000, something like that, out in a public square, in a street corner, somewhere out in the city where the TV cameras can be there to have a riot. And the only time to do that is not during a toad strangler, one of those storm drain washers where you got a driving rainstorm dumping an inch every half hour. You're not going to have a riot. That's why they have fire trucks come out and dump water on them artificially. You cool them off, they don't want to riot. They want to go home and dry off. And so here's some characters that are trying to tell me and you that possibly crime is linked to variations in climate. Fish twaddle. All we got to do is to look into the disintegration of the social institutions of our families, our churches, and our schools, and we know where crime comes from. You ought to write to this booklet on how crime can be stopped, and it tells you what is the cure for crime, which has to do really with the changing of our basic nature. But that's a little bit broad and vast. You can understand by reading the section on criminals are made at home, and how your child learns, and imitating criminal behavior, and how to protect yourself against crime. Know who your enemy is and also your friend, and it gives you some common sense rules about avoiding crime in your area. Write for this booklet on crime can be stopped, here's how. Better yet, pick up the telephone and dial the toll-free number 800-423-4444 for your free copy. That's 800-423-4444 for this booklet on crime can be stopped, here's how. Also request the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. The article on Viking mission to Mars, why, how Europe's political dwarf finally grows up, and an article from Art Linkletter on how to talk to your kids about sex. That's in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. Dial 800-423-4444 for your free copy. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.